The information provided in this podcast and on this website is intended for a Canadian audience. It is for informational purposes only and does not create a physician-patient relationship. It is not to be used as professional medical advice, diagnosis, treatment, or care, nor is it intended to be used as a substitute. Anyone with any questions regarding medical conditions, issues, or problems should seek the advice of a physician. These cases used in this podcast were invented and do not use real people. If there's any resemblance, it's completely coincidental. Hi, Dr. Carson.
Hi, Emma. I'm so happy to be doing MSK Matters podcast with you. I'm so excited to be doing the first episode of this podcast specifically directed toward medical learners, senior medical students, and family medicine residents.
So, James, why did you want to do this podcast?
Well, for one thing, COVID-19 has messed up a lot of our lives. And I have had five medical learners, three residents, and two medical students who've had their MSK electives canceled with me. And I wanted to share with medical learners how we teach our family medicine residents and medical students during an MSK elective in our office. So we had the opportunity to do this podcast. And then my family medicine resident, Dr. Julianne Falcone, pushed me into it. We talked about it. She got excited and she said, I want to really do this.
So can you tell me, other than Dr. Falcone, who's going to be involved?
You're going to be the simulated patient, Emma, along with being the co-host. And each episode, you're going to be playing someone of a different age group with a different MSK problem. We are also going to have a different guest for each episode, and that guest has something special to bring to the table, and we're going to pick their brain and see how they like to teach this topic as well.
Okay, sounds good. How did you get the name MSK Matters?
So, Emma, I actually didn't choose the name. The name was chosen by our family medicine resident. I'm very privileged to work through the University of Toronto's Scarborough Health Network, and I've had a resident in our office for many, many years. They're with us for 2 years, and Dr. Falcone is shared between myself and a colleague for her two-year residency. Dr. Falcone is a chief resident at the Scarborough Health Network, and I'd like to ask her why she chose the name MSK Matters.
So I came up with the name because I wanted something to be catchy, and MSK Matters flows, but we're going to be covering MSK competencies, which is the matters of MSK, but also because MSK actually does matter.
So, James, did you want to introduce the topic of the episode?
Okay, so we're going to be talking about lower extremity running injuries. And Dr. Falcone is going to laugh at this one, but I actually presented this when I was doing my residency at St. Paul's Hospital in Vancouver. And do you want to hear the year? 1980. We presented this, myself and my preceptor, we presented it almost like a grand rounds. And it was very well received. And I can tell you later on in the podcast, the three differential diagnoses that we talked about at length that day.
So, James, why did you choose running injuries for this topic?
Running injuries are typically overuse injuries. And I believe that family medicine residents and senior medical students need to have a good concept of the differential diagnosis for any injuries that they are assessing and managing. Therefore, what we need to do is we need to get a good understanding of what an overuse injury actually sounds like, not only in the history, but what physical examination items you should be sure that you include. And running injuries are so prevalent in your family medicine patient population. You're going to see so many running injuries in your family medicine practice.
So now I will be acting as a simulated patient as we go through the case.
All right. Hi, Emma.
Hi, Dr. Falcone.
So tell me what brings you in today.
I've been having pains in my legs about halfway between my knees and my ankle on the inside of my right leg specifically.
Just tell me a little bit. You're a university student and you play sports. Which sport do you play?
Right now I'm training for a half marathon.
Tell me a little bit more about the pain.
Since COVID and everything's been shut down, I haven't been running as much as I would like to. But with things looking up and reopening, I'm hoping to do a race in the fall. With that in mind, I've been really eager to get out and get training again. And I may have pushed myself a little too far too fast. And after one of my hill training runs about 2 weeks ago, I started getting these pains.
So can you describe the pain to me? Like, what does it feel like?
Well, the pain came on gradually. And it hurts when I run, but not necessarily when I'm walking or just doing my day-to-day things. But then when I start to run, I notice it feels kind of like a stabbing pain.
So the pain goes away when you run?
No, it starts when I run.
And occasionally you have some pain when you're walking?
Only when I'm climbing stairs or running.
You said that the pain is only on the right side of your leg?
Mostly. It does hurt a little bit on the left, but I definitely notice it more in my right.
Are you able to point to or describe to me where exactly you feel the pain?
So on the inside, just to the left of my kind of like shin area. So it's not like by the muscle, but more by the bone.
And does it hurt when you press on the bone?
Only after I've run or it starts to hurt.
And do you have any pain in your ankles at all? Any pain in your feet?
I do have flat feet and I lost my orthotics, so I haven't been wearing those.
And then any pain in your knees?
A little bit, but not major.
What makes the pain better?
After my runs, I will ice it and I've been taking Advil.
And what would you say makes the pain worse?
Definitely when I do my hill training runs and if I have to climb stairs or kind of go on an incline.
And can you tell me a little bit more about the training program that you're following?
Currently, I am training 4 days a week. Three of the runs are about 6K, and then one run is the long run, which is 10K or more. Previously, I've also kind of built up my runs, so I've kind of followed the same training schedule where I do three short ones and then one long run, but I definitely have been going a lot further than 10K in my long runs because I've been so excited to get back out running and training.
And when you go for a run, do you run on the same route all the time, or do you run on a track or uneven pavement, sidewalk?
I mostly run on the road. I used to run on trails.
And in terms of footwear, have you been wearing the same shoes for a while, or have you tried any new shoes recently? I know you mentioned something about orthotics, but what are you wearing for footwear?
Yeah, so I haven't got a new pair of running shoes in about a year and a half.
Just so I can get a more well-rounded history, do you have any other medical problems at all?
I used to get irregular periods. In high school, I had an eating disorder, and I would make myself throw up about 3 times a week.
Okay. And are your periods regular now?
Right now, yes.
And Emma, have you had any injuries before?
No, not in my legs.
All right, Emma. So if it's okay with you, I will go get Dr. Carson so that we can review your case with him and see what he thinks.
So every 2 weeks, I go to Seneca College with one of my family medicine residents on elective or medical students on elective. And at Seneca College, the head athletic therapist is Steve Kopas. I've been working with Steve for many years now. And generally, we sit in on the conversation between the resident and the student athlete. We watch the history, but sometimes we'll go for coffee. And I know that Steve likes his Timmy's dark roast with no milk, no sugar. And I always like original blend with one milk. Now, to get there, we have to go from building G to, Steve, help me with this. Is it building B?
A.
It's building A. And there's actually one set of stairs, two ramps, and 14 left turns and 14 right turns to get to Timmy's. So what we're going to do in this podcast is Steve and I are going to recreate our coffee walk while Dr. Falcone is interviewing our simulated patient.
So Dr. Carson, I was wondering, like, when you have your residents with you and preparing to bring them into Seneca and doing the musculoskeletal assessments, what is it that you do to help prepare them for that placement while they're with you?
Well, you know, I like to give them a number of resources even before they start with me. We always send a link to the YouTube Dr. Carson MSK. It's a shoulder and knee seminar that I gave to residents about 13 years ago. And they've always liked to see that before even their first clinic day with us. We also give them a Google Drive link. And on that, we have some of our presentations to residents on concussion, upper extremities, lower extremities, as well as a bunch of concussion resources.
Do you guys get into any specifics with like the different types of sports and common injuries that arise at the different sports?
No, we tend to take things case by case, Steve. We can only teach via the cases that do present, and whatever is booked that week for the resident, we try and allocate all the MSK cases for the elective resident. And if it's all soccer one week, it's all soccer. If it's all hockey one week, it's all hockey. We tend to work by enhancing the resident's critical thinking. I just want to get your initial impressions about this exertional leg pain case.
Well, I mean, it sounds definitely like the athlete had started to train a little bit too soon and increase their amount of mileage or their hill training, it sounds like, almost that they're not necessarily used to. So it can definitely increase that stress through the leg and can cause some of the pain that way, I think.
Steve, can you tell me some of the history questions that family medicine residents and medical students should not miss when they are talking to a patient about exertional leg pain?
I think the big thing that I always teach my students as well is ask things like their mileage that they run in a week. How many kilometers are they doing? When did the last time that they got a new pair of shoes? That plays a huge factor in it as well, in the cushioning of their shoes. And while they're training, if they're running in an old pair of shoes, then that can lead to increased exertional stress through the legs as well onto it. So that's definitely one of the questions that we definitely want to make sure that we ask during any type of exertional training injuries on it, for sure.
Well, that feeds into the training errors that I always talk to my medical learners about. Steve, I'm always impressed by your physical examination. For example, when you're examining the knee, you get right up to the patient and you put your knee under their knee when you do the Lockman test, and you're so slick with that. You know, I've always admired the tools that you have, and wearing that Seneca red shirt, it reminds me that you're just like a Swiss Army knife. You've got so many tools. So can you give our medical learners some idea about some of the physical exam pearls with regard to evaluating a patient with exertional leg pain?
The big ones that we tend to look at is definitely ankle range of motion. So we're looking at primarily into like a lot of the dorsiflexion range is often limited on the side that they have a lot of their exertional pain onto. The other one is great toe range of motion is often overlooked as well, with the flexor hallucis longus that comes down there. And in the same area there, you get a lot of that medial tibial stress syndrome pain. Limited range of motion in that first ray is also missed, and can also be a main factor leading to that cause of pain as well. So those are kind of the two main things that we look at when we have somebody that has that medial stress pain syndrome.
And when you have those range of motion deficits, it also factors into the rehabilitation, doesn't it?
Of course, yeah. So, I mean, those limitations in the range are going to necessarily affect probably their whole stride length as well. So what we need to do is we work a lot on mobilizing the joints, both that first ray and the talus, ensure that we have enough range of motion in both joints so that they can have full range to be able to push through in their stride.
Hi, Dr. Falcone. I see you've met Emma today, and can you give me a quick summary of the history and physical pertinent positives and negatives?
So Emma is a 21-year-old college student who's been training for a half marathon. She is a runner, took a little break, and then she's been ramping up running longer distances during this COVID pandemic time. She's experiencing some pain along the medial aspect of her shins, the right side more than the left. On palpation, she is quite tender at the junction of the middle and distal one-third of the medial portion of the tibia. And she also has pain with resisted plantar flexion.
Dr. Falcone, you've been in my clinic many times, and now you know what my favorite game is, right? It's a variation of the 1 minute preceptor, and we call it your Vegas bet. So just for the listeners, we'll describe the Vegas bet. The working diagnosis is what gets the most money out of $100, but you should try and give four other differential diagnosis items, and all the money that you're betting of those five items have to add up to $100. So what's your working diagnosis, and how much money are you going to give it?
All right, so my working diagnosis, based on her history and her presentation, is shin splints or medial tibial stress syndrome. I'm going to give that about $70.
Perfect. And what are you going to spend the rest of your $30 on, Dr. Falcone?
I'm going to, certainly one thing that I don't want to miss and would also be on the differential would be a stress fracture. So I'm going to give that $25.
Ooh, okay.
And the other $5 is going to go to another differential. Compartment syndrome.
Whoa, awesome. Good for you. You know, pre-COVID, I would have given her a fist bump for that one, because those are the exact three items that we discussed in 1980 at the St. Paul's Hospital Grand Rounds. We discussed medial tibial stress syndrome. We discussed stress fracture, and we discussed chronic compartment syndrome. So good for you. I'm glad you got it. In terms of the 1 minute preceptor, we want to get a commitment. We want to probe for supporting evidence. So why are you giving the stress fracture second choice?
I just think it's an important diagnosis to not miss, because it would certainly change the management. And certainly in a young athlete, you don't want to miss this, because it could put her out for 6 months or more.
What evidence do we have that she possibly could have a stress fracture, though?
So she has a history of the female athlete triad, which is amenorrhea, eating disorder, and osteoporosis.
Yeah. Not quite in that order, but well done. Disordered eating is kind of a vague reference to the eating disorder. So it's one of those eating disorders not otherwise specified, or NOS, followed by amenorrhea. And we don't know that she's had osteoporosis, so we don't know for sure that she's had female athlete triad, but it raises your level of suspicion, right?
Right.
And therefore, you may alter your management because of that. So I want to reinforce what was done well. I think that you did elicit that history of the high school era eating disorder and menstrual abnormalities. And you asked a lot of things about training errors. You actually asked about her shoes. You asked about trails, and whether she's changed surfaces. And so it's really important to differentiate between an injury that is due to overuse and an injury that is due to acute trauma. So you did that really well. I'm going to teach you a general principle, and that is that overuse injuries typically have two components. They are either training error or biomechanical abnormality. And the biomechanical abnormality, we know that this patient has significant pronation. Indeed, she's got a leg length discrepancy. So, Dr. Falcone, what are your thoughts on investigation given that differential diagnosis?
So what I would think about in terms of investigations, if any are needed, I would think about an X-ray, although I don't believe that would necessarily show anything. when you're looking for a stress fracture. So perhaps a bone scan or an MRI if you're concerned about a stress fracture.
What are your thoughts on management and possible referral?
In terms of management, I would start with conservative management. So activity modification, starting with as simple as getting new running shoes and getting her fit for her stance in proper running shoes. I know orthotics can be controversial, but she's had them before and potentially that could help. She mentioned that she was doing a lot of hill training, so avoiding hill training. So I think that can aggravate the shin splints. She was trying ice as well as NSAIDs, and definitely linking her up with physiotherapy.
So I think it's really important to understand that patient-centered interviewing, what her expectations are from coming to visit you, what her worst fears are, and finding common ground in management. We teach that with all family medicine cases, and I think it's really key here to ensure that you at least get some buy-in, because if you're going to tell her that dirty four-letter word, stop, then you're pretty much assured that she's going to go out and run her hardest. It's a little dose of reality. I'm not sure how many half marathons are going to happen this coming autumn, because I don't think COVID is going to be gone so quickly. And so she needs to temper her expectations for her training. What really needs to happen is you need to evolve a plan with her, and I would not investigate her at all, because the great likelihood is that this is medial tibial stress syndrome, which will improve with activity modification and some rehab. So my very first thing is to tell her to not stop running, but to modify her activities. I like to do that with a walk-run program. This can really, really assist someone who does not want to give up their dream of doing that half marathon. Realistic expectations are important, but I don't like to tell people to stop. I was wanting to hear when you wanted to recheck her.
I would follow up with her in 2 to 3 weeks.
I think that's perfect. And if she is worse at that time, then you have the opportunity to do some diagnostic imaging.
Now let's hear what expertise Steve Kopis has to add.
How do you think about the next several visits, and how do you proceed, not only with their rehabilitation, but also with the mental health issues of the rehabilitation as they get back into their sport?
What we tend to do, especially in the early stages of our rehab, is really try to decrease their pain as quickly as we can. So we use different pain modalities, or we work in there and try and work on the root cause of those pains. So whether, again, it's the range of motion issues, tightness into the calves, gastroc soleus. We do a lot of manual work into the interosseous membrane and help release the tension in that as well as even into the superior tib-fib joint, and work up the chain on them as well. As far as the mental health stuff, I mean, athletes are always wanting to drive and work hard and continue to do it. So with this type of an injury, the biggest thing is trying to rest and modify their training a little bit, which is always difficult to ask an athlete to kind of chill out and rest on that. Without having them to completely stop. So we often suggest other ways of training for them. So whether they are on the bike, or if they have access to a pool and they can do some upper body swimming, and things that way to kind of ease the tension and ease the stress on the lower leg while they can still work on their cardio and allowing their leg to rest and heal at the same time.
In my advice, I've long given out a handout called the Walk Run Program, and I have divided the runner's intended start distance in five components. So let's imagine they want to run 5K. So it's 5 1-kilometer segments. And then what I give is a 3-week program. And this is all on paper. They start to jog the third of the 5 segments, and they walk the first, second, fourth, and fifth. They do that a second night. And then on day 3, we add a second jogging component. So they jog the second and the fourth. Walking segments 1, 3, and 5. And then we just go every 2 days, one more, so that by the end of 10 days, we're turning that jogging into a run and the walking part into a jog. And I'm just wondering if you have some kind of gradual return to sport protocol that you do for the patients with exertional leg pain.
That's a great program that you have. And we do something similar. We don't have it as laid out on paper, but we talk to them about the same idea where they run a certain distance or walk, or they maybe will run, walk the first kilometer and then jog a second, walk a third, rock jog a fourth. So similar process that you had laid out for them that way. As they start to increase their running schedule again. Again, the big thing is onto then and then incorporating into any sort of hills or training that way onto them and the type of surface that they're running on as well. If they're always running on concrete, we maybe will get them to maybe try running on grass or do something different that way to help with the shock absorption as well instead of just the concrete all the time.
In closing, Steve, do you have any things you'd like to tell medical learners about what athletic therapists can do as the rehab professional allies for their patients' recovery?
I think the big thing is realizing that as athletic therapists, we're with the athletes pretty much day in and day out, especially in the settings that I'm in with the college, or if you're a therapist working with a specific team, see them on a regular basis, and we're able to really monitor their workload and their injuries and their mental health as we go through everything, as well as going through the full assessments and treatments and rehab protocols in the clinic. They tend to listen to us and tend to open up to us a little bit more than if they're seeing somebody once or twice a week that they don't necessarily see on a regular basis. So we definitely have that relationship with the athletes and can relay that on with the sports med physicians as well.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. We hope you enjoyed. This podcast is produced by Emma Jacobs along with associate producer Enrique Amichuro. Special thanks to the Department of Family Medicine at the Scarborough Health Network, the Athletic Department at Seneca College, and the Canadian Academy of Sport and Exercise Medicine for their support. See you next time.